Everything's fine.
That's cool, man.
It's fine. The whole world's not doing? Dying.
You're doing fine. You're doing fine. Okay.
I'm shooting up
heroin?
No. Bleach. Just gonna shoot up some bleach.
Oh, in your body right now. Hey, yeah. I was gonna drink a Red Bull in a few minutes, but I'm gonna drink my coffee out of my Spike mug first.
You Buffy nerd. God.
Come on, you got me the friggin' mug, dude.
I know. You have to show it off to everybody. Look at me, I like Buffy.
Yeah, I do. It's my. I want to keep Spike as my little boy.
Look at me. Let me drink out of my Deadpool mug. Hold on.
Did you?
Hold on. Look, it's not full of pencils and stuff.
Just stab yourself in the nose.
That's
when I was in high school. So when I was in about to graduate high school, Buffy was like a huge thing, right? Because I think it came out in 97, mm-hmm. and I had my like slick back hair and like longer hair. So people always called me Spike because I was a goth kid, and I was really sort of bothered by it because I was like, oh yeah, you know, compare me to some kind of like character on a show, okay. And now that I got older and I watched the show and Spike was like the most redeeming part of it, despite the fact that he's also terrible, I was like, okay, cool, I'll take that.
Hey, are we actually starting this show? Is this show started?
Oh, I forgot we were doing this podcast and not our old one. And I'm Rance.
And we're in quarantine.
And we're also having significant issues understanding how audio works.
Cool. This is the Quarantine Book Club.
And this week we are talking about Doom. Well, we're continuing to talk about Doom, Knee Deep in the Dead by Defeated Hugh and Brad Linneweaver. You know, I think he did this to us on purpose.
Because made us read this book?
Well, I can't understand
this. We did that to ourselves.
Yeah, we did. I am always consistently aware of the fact that I'm likely pronouncing his name wrong.
Are you normally calling him an asshole for picking a different name?
Yeah.
I think that's rude and I don't.
No, it's.
Culturally insensitive?
No. Because.
Drinks upside
down. I don't. You know, I. If he was a good person, I would care. But he sucks.
He does suck. I went down a rabbit hole.
With him?
Before, I'm not sure. Well, I'll tell you about it before even reading the podcast.
So last time we got...
before even reading the book.
Last time we got together, we encouraged people to read up through chapter 16
yes.
of this tome of awesomeness.
We also gave them some homework.
I don't remember the homework. Like a good teacher. So now this is the part, like, if I was teaching a class, I would be like, okay, so, quick reminder, could somebody remind me what we did last time, almost as, like, a refresher, and that's when the kids are all like, ooh, here's the thing that I talked about, here's the thing that I learned, and really, it's because my brain doesn't work, and I just need to know where we left off, because taking notes is bad. I'm not good at it.
I took a lot of notes.
I dog-eared some pages.
Dude, reading this book is exhausting.
Why?
It's exhausting and I hate it. It's bad. I'm tired of stopping to write down notes. I'm noting on Kindle, so I'm sitting there and having to do that awkward thing where you highlight the page with two fingers and then like it's so bad.
That to me seems more exhausting than the actual process of taking notes. I have to do it by hand. I didn't write on this book because it's not worth it. Mm-hmm. But I did highlight a few things, which means that once I turn 75 and I look back at this book and I go, oh, remember that time I read that really terrible Doom book? And I'm not going to remember why I highlighted things, but I did dog-ear pages, as you can tell.
One of
as to why I dog-eared them, I couldn't really
because remember. You wanted to damage the book in some way, like it's damaging your soul.
It doesn't hurt me too bad. It hurts me more as less. This is where you know my priorities come together. It hurts me less as someone with significant literary research expertise and more as a Doom fan. So the Doom, the part of me that loves Doom is more offended than the person who loves books and reading and stories and writing. And I think that's where you're getting more offended, right?
No, I'm getting offended because it's I'm trying not to curse too much because I'd like this to be a clean podcast to, like, you know, so I could share it with teachers and stuff like that. But it's f***ing bad, dude.
Yeah.
It's a bad book. I want to find Daffod Abhew and I want to punch him in the face.
Why not Brad Lynnweaver, though?
I want to find Brad Lynnweaver.
So you have to dig him up.
Dig him up, and then I want to punch him in the face. Then I want to bury him. Then dig him back up again just so I can spit on him.
That's going pretty heavy, man.
Dude, these dudes have a real problem with continuity. Several times I've noted in my reading that they talk about a thing that didn't happen. Like there's a part where I've read forward past our reading because I'm so mad right now. I'm so mad that I'm reading.
Let's just start pouring it on. Chapters 1 through 16.
Okay.
Chapters 1 through 16 of the first book.
I need you to know that a friend of ours of the show, one of the Matts, texted me the other day and asked when the next episode was coming out because he was having a hard time reading the book, but he wanted to make sure that he got through chapter 16 and wanted to make sure he could read the minimal number of pages before he had to listen to the next episode.
So at least in my copy, going up through 16, and the print version is probably different, but going up through 16 is page 121.
I don't know what it is in mine right now because I'm not there because I have to slip through stuff.
If you happen to not read yet, stop the podcast right now. Read up through 16 and you will understand all of the who cares,
just listen, who cares, because we're gonna
just abandon the homework. It's all complete anarchy, chaos reigns, and who cares?
Look, we're gonna spoil it anyway. We're gonna tell you what the book's about.
Have you played Doom?
Yeah, it's nothing like that, bro.
It wants to be, though.
It wants to be, and I have questions to ask you about it.
Yeah, because you know I'll be able to answer them.
I mean, I hope so, because, wow.
Let's start talking about who, before we, I know you have a lot of stuff you want to talk about with this.
Mm-hmm.
I have some things I want to talk about with it, probably not nearly as extensive as what you want to talk about. But first, I want us to talk about the main characters.
Can we not talk about the main characters first? Please. Rant.
We gotta know the actors.
Dude, I'm not there yet.
Okay.
I'm at the dedication.
Yeah, I'm gonna give this one to you. Let's start off with Bob thoughts. Let's start off with Bob rage.
I read a book.
You've taken your berserker pack. You've injected the berserker. Because that's a smart idea to do under pressure. Like, you've injected yourself with the berserker rage, and now you're going to rip and tear. This book has huge guts.
Do you want to tell a different joke?
Nope.
Okay.
I just wanted to keep going from there.
Can I go?
Please do.
Can I go?
It's all for you. Do you want me to give you a timer?
Fine.
No, I don't know. I don't know how you want me to do this. I'm just trying to help out.
All I know is that we're 9 minutes into recording right
good.
Now. Good. And
because we only have 51 left.
Okay, so the now you got me all flustered.
Sorry.
What is this called? The introduction to the book, the dedication.
Yeah.
It is one of the weirdest dedications that I've ever read.
So it's the first three words. They kill me.
Yeah. Dedicated with lust. to Camille Paglia, who smokes the same cigars as Fred Olin Ray.
I didn't look up who any of these people were.
Oh, I did, and I'm angry at myself for doing so.
Can we play 10 questions with this?
Yeah, please.
Okay. You know who these people are, right?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Okay. First question. Is this dedication in any regard satirical?
I don't know.
Okay.
That's one of the problems with it is that I can't tell.
Question two. Is Camille Paglia related to one of the authors?
I also can't tell. Okay. I know that sounds stupid, but I did the research. I was looking all over the internet trying to find connections. At first, I thought that this was a dedication out of respect and a joke. Because I will say that Fred Olin Ray was definitely good friends with Brad Linaweaver. He's a movie director, if you want to call him that. He's a B-movie director who writes and directs really bad movies and erotic cable movies.
So it was dedicated with Lust.
Yes.
So, okay.
Like, his movies included Sexual Witchcraft and Brad Linaweaver's own Super Shark that Brad Linaweaver...
We're going to do a little bit of sexual witchcraft.
It's also called something else like Horny Witches or something.
Do you want to come to my house and check out my sexual witchcraft? Hang out with some horny witches with my sexual witchcraft.
Okay, so...
What is sexual witch... Oh, God, that was loud. Whew. What is sexual witchcraft?
I don't know.
Is it dedicated with lust?
It is dedicated with lust. So okay, I get the Fred Olin Ray thing, because he every like image of him that you find, he's smoking a cigar.
Yes.
Camille Paglia. Mm-hmm. First of all.
Movie star, porn star?
What?
Movie star, porn star?
No. She's an intellectual and feminist activist.
Oh.
But wait, she's a libertarian. It goes deeper, though. According to the Wikipedia, they don't even have enough respect for this person. They say they are transgender, and the Wikipedia just constantly refers to them as she. It's like one of the last lines in the Wikipedia. What's even worse is this person isn't just a libertarian. They also support NAMBLA.
No!
Yeah, and if anyone doesn't know what that is, that's the National Association of Man-Boy Love.
Wait, so...
She supports a pedophiliac association. She made a quote somewhere. I don't have the quote written down, so I'm probably going to misquote it.
Yeah,
basically
fine.
Said that every major advancement in Western civilization could be attributed to a man and a boy sexually in a relationship. Mm.
I'm reading about, like, because you know, you did the research that was necessary for this, and I didn't.
It's shocking. She's very, they are very into,
okay.
I'm using they because there's no specific term listed other than,
well, it's kind of you to do that because it does say in here, regardless of how much of a piece of garbage they may be, it says Paglia identifies as transgender and stated that she is what the Wikipedia uses, but let's say they stated that they has never identified at all with being a woman. So it's kind to say they. So good on you. Like I think that's at least appropriate for you to do.
I don't know that they deserve it, though.
Right.
Because, God, what a monster.
Okay, but I have a question that I need to ask then. Dedicated with lust to Camille Paglia, who smokes the same cigars as Fred Olin Ray. There are layers here.
There are.
Smokes the same cigars could also be like drinks the Kool-Aid, right? Like is into the same kind of ideas, enjoys the same kind of stuff. Is that same kind of stuff NAMBLA related?
I that's what's scary.
Because it's dedicated with lust.
It's freaking me out, dude.
But also, cigars is a really interesting choice.
Yeah.
Because that is in its own regard phallic and suggestive of, like, you know, sexual pleasure.
Right.
I mean, this was okay because
a specific. This is right around the Bill Clinton scandal.
Yep, exactly.
Also, she
95. Right. This when was the Bill Clinton scandal? Was it?
I don't remember.
Actually, I think it may be before that.
She was also very publicly outspoken about Hillary Clinton. Disliked Hillary Clinton because didn't feel that Hillary Clinton was acting properly as a feminist, which we, you know, as a feminist role model, which is fine. They also have problems with regular feminists. I believe there might have been comments about Steinem's work. It's
so are they like they're like so you're talking about like TERFs, right?
I don't know what TERF
means. Trans-exclusionary radical feminists, like yeah, let's be feminist, but feminism is only for women with vaginas.
Dude, I don't even know. It's so bad. I just if someone else wants to do more research, because I can't, my brain hurts, and find out and drop us a line and let us know, because it's a scary rabbit hole.
Okay, so here's the other weird thing. So this book was published between 95 and 96, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the tapes revealing the affair didn't begin to get recorded until 97.
Okay.
So I think it's only coincidental that we make the connect. I mean, right there, because the minute that you said it, my brain started going there too with the cigar, right? But also, if we're not looking at this as a reference to some kind of like libertarian har at the liberals, it's also a really insulting sexual reference back to Camille Paglia, because if they identify as transgender, it's right. Also a very like it's a very typically sorry, I'm umming a lot. I'm trying to think the right way to put
it's
this.
It's fine. I'll fix it in post.
Fix it in post. It's a very typically misogynistic way to refer back to women in the sense of like using a cigar as a manipulatory object. I don't know. It goes down this hole. And I think the part that bothers me the most about the dedication is the with lust part.
Yeah. It's creepy
and weird. That's the key. That's the weird key that doesn't turn the tumblers, but you need that key to get into this vault.
So just keep that in mind as we go through the book.
Okay.
Because I can't – there's no more that I can say about it other than it was horrifying and disgusting and is now tainting – I said taint. It's now tainting everything that I read when I'm reading this book.
It sounds like a real – that's a real like proto-Larry Correa statement.
It is. It's –
And for those of you who don't know, Larry Correa is we refer to him affectionately or with hatred as Big Papa LC.
LC, Big Papa
and
LC.
Larry Correa, if you're unfamiliar with him, he is a fairly popular writer currently. He's written the Monster Hunter International series. What else was the other series that he wrote in like 1930s?
Oh gosh.
Hard-boiled magic.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I off the top of my head.
So we used to really like Larry Correa
mm-hmm.
when we just read his books. And then we started going down the rabbit hole of like who Larry Correa was. And he's just this super outspoken libertarian asshole.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to separate. And I'm happy to say that. Like if Larry Correa saw this and he wanted to come on here and be like, but I'm not an asshole. Dude, you're an asshole. Just see, I'm coming out of my mouth. Larry Correa is an asshole. Big Papa LC, I love you, Big Papa LC, but you're terrible, terrible to people. I don't care if you live on a ranch in Montana, where the hell you live. You don't know anything about coronavirus, even though your online blog, which looks like garbage, might suggest that you are. If you want to go to monsterhunterinternational.net or whatever it is, learn all about how Larry Correa thinks all about COVID-19, you can do it. Also, this guy puts his own face on the front of his own stupid books.
There was that. There definitely was that book where his face is on a muscle-bound barbarian warrior. That's
and
cool.
And it sucks because I like his books.
I know. I love most of his writing. I don't
other
like
than the most recent Monster Hunter International book, which is Hot Diarrhea.
There was also the books that he writes specifically for Audible, the Tom Stranger series, which are usually like free, but they're just basically libertarian propaganda this in guy also sci-fi would, format.
Have you gone down the rabbit hole of the Sad Puppies movement?
You've told me a little bit about it. I'm afraid. God, I'm sitting.
This
here
is with, why this is why libertarians suck when it comes to like these books, dude. Because they're such whiny babies.
I've got my book sitting on page one they here. Smell just want to
like,
read it.
They smell like gunpowder and shoelaces. And I don't like the way I. Whatever. Let's just get to the book because.
Okay, so now let's talk about your characters.
Let's
talk about our characters.
Part one, characters.
Hey, Flynn Taggart's a Marine.
Hey,
he's the best Marine.
I love the Semper Corps. I live for the Corps. Semper Fi. I live for the Corps. My dad might have been a drunk.
He was in jail. I don't know if that's reading too far ahead. Spoiler alert.
Who cares?
Oh, my God. Also, my friends call me Fly. It's if you only call me Fly if you're not mad at me. If you're mad at me, then you...
But he did go to Catholic school.
Cool. Now,
so he's got a lot of... He's got a lot of Catholic guilt. He knows a lot about... religion, I guess, or so he thinks. And he refers to himself as yours truly. Because it's written in first person, right?
Well, that's the first mistake. I feel like these two jackasses, they flipped back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And like one would write a chapter, then the other one would write a chapter. And they just give each other a synopsis, but then not actually say what was actually done in the chapter. So then they go, hey... Guess what? Remember when I killed that demon that's laying on the floor there? What demon? You kicked the demon that was... Who killed that? I don't know. Last thing I knew, you shot a zombie. Good job.
I have a problem with... So I go back and forth between their capacity as writers to successfully write in first person... and then like there's times where I'm like, oh, that was really great first person narration. And then there's other times where it's garbage first person narration. They do an awesome job, I think, at times of actually establishing Flynn Taggart as a character who has some body, right?
He
does love body. I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt for a second. So I love his voice. I think they do a really good job because, well, obviously this is a book in which at least the first 120 pages, there's almost no talking.
Mm-hmm.
There's no dialogue because he's by himself. He's mm-hmm. got to go into the hangar and then the toxin refinery and then the Phobos lab and the command center because we have to slide in all the names of the levels.
Is it in level order?
Yes, it is. It is.
I was wondering that. Yep, that's one of my notes in there.
It is, and there's all these references to specific rooms in the original Doom that I find interesting. The one that mm-hmm. jumps out to me is he talks specifically about, I'm trying to find the
computer room?
On page 86, Phobos Lab was dark. Phobos Lab stank like an open sewer. But if there was anything left of the original installation here, then medical supplies had to be near at hand if they hadn't been left in the typical condition of guns and radio sets. In the game, Phobos Lab is surprisingly dark, and also he mentions at the very end, to exit the labs, I had to enter the darkest room yet, black as coal. I wasn't surprised. This was at the north end of the installation, where after groping in the dark by touch and even daring to use my tiny penlight, I found a small opening. This led down a narrow corridor to a tight metal spiral staircase going down, way down. I started to get very dizzy, spinning around so many times. The very end of the Phobos Lab, E1M5, is remarkably dark in the original Doom, as is a lot of the level, but it is this tall room with all of these strange-shaped walls and a bunch of shotgun zombie hit scanners. So not only is it hard as hell to see what's happening other than by the glowing eyes of the enemies, but getting around it is an absolute mess. So I really liked that because I was like, oh, these guys play Doom. They know the game that I'm playing.
Do you think they played Doom, or do you think they were handed a synopsis of each of the levels and what was important about the level? Or, I mean, do you think they were given them Doom and they, like a couple of babies played their way through the lowest difficulty level just so they could figure out what the game was.
Maybe so, but I do think regardless of that, they did play it, I think.
Okay.
There's one part that I loved in here I do say I loved it because I thought it was clever. I'm going to read something one more time. On page 92, he's talking about, and this is where Flynn Taggart as a narrator gets really clever. Because, well, granted, he could also be just sort of this could be just the authorial voice coming in here.
Okay, I'm on page, give me a second, page 92?
For me, it's 92.
I don't know. Read it, because I want to know if our pages line up.
They weren't pitiful wrecks that looked human, though dead inside. They weren't the spinies or metal skulls or ghosts, either. The ones making snuffling pig sounds gave me the creeps, that part.
Not there. Okay. I'm nowhere near there.
So he talks about why these creatures are mindlessly attacking. And there's this moment in here that is so metatextual. He talks about why they're not attacking in an organized format. He says, the intelligence was there, just well hidden. Even without the talking demon, the alien technology itself was proof of a mastermind.
I do. Actually, that is close to where I am. Say that. Well, give me again. Sorry.
So, you're good.
You
so
said
why didn't the
92?
Yeah. So why didn't the intelligence simply organize the monsters and zombies into a naval search pattern and be done with it? Why were Arlene, the other main character, why weren't Arlene and I being allowed to play Gypsy, entering one level after another, shooting it out with pretty much the same cast of characters, encountering the same hazards, and beating them over and over and over again? Maybe it was all a pre-invasion test, or worse still, a sadistic game. But test or game, it had to be teaching the enemy mind something important. The important question for the survival of the human race was, what the hell was I learning? I hated to admit it, but so far the answer was not much. It's this interesting callback to... this is based on a game where you do the same repetitive stuff over and over.
Yeah.
Can we take this process of repetitive stuff that's being done over and over and turn it into blueprint? Is something actually like reading a book about an unorganized enemy force attacking this lab? Is there something we can actually do with that plot wise? And they do, as we know about it from books 3 and 4.
Right.
They do, and this becomes a model for something else that happens later. And I liked that bit of foreshadowing because it felt like to me that they actually did have a direction in mind when it came to this book, that they thought they were going to go somewhere. I don't think they actually thought they were going to go the places they go.
I mean, you'll be damned if you can forget that you're reading a book about Doom.
Right, right.
Because the whole time, that's all... we're just reminding you that you're playing Doom. Not only that you're playing Doom, you're playing a game. This is a book based on a game. We're going to talk. We're going to make video game references. We're going to tell you about stuff.
You could just be playing Doom.
You could just play Doom instead of reading the book. In fact, I know it'll probably hurt our listenership of 5 people, but just go read the books. I mean, go play the games.
Go play the games.
Don't read the books. These books are bad. I don't...
I'll defend them a little bit. I'll defend them a little bit.
I can't anymore. After going back and rereading them, I can't. I have
steamrolled this, by the way, so I'm so sorry.
It's fine.
I want to let you go back to what you were going to talk about.
Okay, so page 1, I'm right off the bat. First,
I'm jumping to 92, and here you are, page 1.
This is actually page, it is page 1. The first page of the introduction. It's called Before the Beginning.
Is this where he spells Kafiristan the wrong way?
There is that. What's a dirty war? Let's go ahead and maybe explain the terms that we're going to use. If we're going to say dirty war, tell me what that is.
Did you look that up?
I think I did and didn't find anything. I lost some of my notes.
I get the feeling, and I don't know exactly what it is at the top of my head, so I'm just going to take a guess. But my presumption is a dirty war is a war in which, I mean, all wars are dirty, right?
Yeah.
But a dirty war is not necessarily a war that's based on political ideology or it's based on some kind of insurrection, some kind of maybe like dirty money switching hands. So it's like almost using a military as a mercenary force.
Gotcha. Okay.
Cool. Like conceivably so, some people could say something like Vietnam was a dirty war, right? Like we had intent to be there for very political, very advantageous reasons, but maybe we shouldn't have been there.
Okay,
I don't know. I'm not saying that as a historian. I'm just using that as an example.
Well, so that's a good example of their inability to express things to the reader in a way that is functional and useful. You can throw me a term, that's fine, but
right.
I'm going to go ahead and drop, because I've been reading the books lately, the name of another cool libertarian author, Jim Butcher. At least what Butcher does every book is he gives you a slight little recap of the important things. Like, if he introduces a character that's important to the series, he'll give you a paragraph of background about that character. He'll say what's, like, if there's an event that happened that's important, he'll tell you, he'll explain what that is. These guys don't do that because I don't think they understood what writing a mythology or was about.
Request.
Yeah.
We have to be real careful with Jim Butcher.
Why?
Because I really like Jim Butcher.
I do too. I'm not busting on Jim Butcher, and I'm not busting on his writing at all. I'm using him as an example to say that he does it well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So homeworks. Talking about homeworks. And this example that I'm making for you right now. My homework last week was to ask readers how many times the use of Lieutenant Beelzebub came up in the book after he calls his commanding officer Lieutenant Weems once at the beginning of the on page 3. He calls him
Lieutenant Beelzebub.
Page 3. Yeah. He calls him Lieutenant Beelzebub. How many other times does he use that throughout the book? It's a big fat zero.
Yep.
None. He never does it again. He talks about this guy a lot in the first couple chapters.
He does. You had me laughing because last week, when we assigned this, I was up to like page 95. And when you asked that question, I was sort of thinking, what is Bob going with this? Because I don't remember him saying Beelzebub anymore.
Because he doesn't. It's what they do throughout the whole book. They drop a thing and then they just go, sorry, forgot about that part because we don't know how to write a book together as two people. We're just two f***ing dumb shits.
What that is just something that could be cut out with editing. It's like just if it's never mentioned again, just erase it. Like just redline that thing, get it out of there. It's five words we don't need anymore.
I want to look up who the author is and I want to talk to you, right? Or not author, editor. Whoever edited this book.
They're dead. It's fine.
You. This is your fault. You let this happen. You let these two dipshits just talk back and forth to each other about fun, stupid ideas and then never complete any full thought. It's like two fifth graders were writing a story about their favorite video game and then mommy just went, okay, I'll put this on the web. It's bad fan fiction. That's what this trash is. It's bad fan fiction.
The first two paragraphs of the book, and I just scratched my butt, by the way. This is still on the Kafiristan is spelled wrong page. The second paragraph is full of the most garbled, unnecessary, pseudo-intellectual, pseudo-historical, semi-political garbage. And this is not how you start a Doom book.
No.
Kafiristan is about as close as you can come to hell on Earth.
Dude, that's a reference to Doom.
I got my thumb on the red button Doom knowledge. I say that with authority. I've spent the last 18 months doing a tour here, trying to keep the Kafiri People's Liberation Army, who call themselves the Scythe of Glory, from the throats of the rightist who have the backing of Azeri transplants from the south, who want to keep their enclaves, who are fighting a dirty war against communist Cuban and Peruvian mercs. Jeez, you get the
picture. Wait, mercs?
Yeah.
In my version, oh my god. In my version, it says Mears, M-E-R-E-S. Hold on.
We're gonna... Mears? That's so...
Mears.
That? Yep. Look here. Look here. I can't really find it. Do you see it, Mercs?
No, up a little bit. There it is. Yeah.
Yep, Mercs. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
It's a snarled skein of a million bloody threads up here on the top of the world in the northern extension of the Karakoram Range between Afghanistan and Samarkand and Uzbekistan. Like, you vanished. You're now Doom Violent J. You gave me genital warts.
Fixed.
You did it. Good job, man.
Can't wait so everybody sees my cool green sheet hiding behind me.
That is the most exhausting first paragraph. And it does nothing.
No, it's stupid.
It does truly nothing. I am a fan of exposition. But at no point ever in the rest of this book does any of that come up or is it even essential. And it's truly wasted words.
That's 90% of this book. I feel like...
Which is a shame because the book is only like 220 pages anyway.
They could have taken whatever this one and the next book are and probably just slapped them together into one book. Because I'm starting to go through here and I'm looking at... I'm afraid we made a mistake, dude.
No, we didn't. We're fine.
No, we made a mistake because...
There's not much to talk about?
There isn't, because it's just such garbage.
No, there's... Keep talking.
It's not... There's no substance to it. Yeah, it's a video game book, but I can't talk about character motivations, because there are none, except Flynn Taggart wants to get his willy wet.
With his best friend.
Oh, I'm going to keep reminding you that she's my best friend.
Well, she's just my best friend, but I still want to do her.
Character analysis.
Of Flynn Taggart?
Does he have a southern accent?
No. I want him. He probably should.
He does in mine, but it's not a strong southern accent.
It's just a little bit there, right?
Yes. Like he's a country boy accent.
Right. Right. Like it's not like talking like this. Like it's not like, yeah, I'm gonna smoke a cigarette and bang my sister. I gotta get in that. Instead, it's more like he just got a little bit of a southern accent, so he's a. It's almost like it just comes in now and then.
Yes.
When he's talking, but like when he's sucking vacuum and watching restricted flicks in the rec room.
That's it. There's terminology. I think one of the authors has a good grasp of what Flynn Taggart's internal monologue is, and I think one of them doesn't.
Yes, and I think his maternal monologue, Jesus. His internal monologue.
He's a mommy. I'm Flynn Taggart. Hello, baby. Flynn Taggart, I'm your mommy.
Really shines outside of the action sequences, and when that author, whoever it is, and I have a feeling it's Brad Linweaver, because I'm going to give Dead Brad a bit of credit.
Yeah.
Especially because... It's those times as well where this book sounds Heinleinian in tone.
He had high expectations and hopes for what this writing was. And it's good to have lofty goals.
Yeah.
But he just dropped the ball. And he and his good buddy Daffy, they...
So are we suggesting that all the good parts, the good sparks of possibility in this book are... Brad Linneweaver's doing and not Daffy of Hughes?
Yes, let's be kind to the dead.
Okay.
Knee deep in those deads. I'm fist deep in this dead guy.
Is that with your berserker fist?
Yeah, clearly.
When you inject...
I'm talking about punching bodies of the berserker pack.
Okay. So what else you got going on? What else are you thinking about?
Okay. Let's just jump to chapter one. Give some real quick, I know we're all over the place, but that's chapter funny. One, just like in the Doom Readme, they go to this, country, this war, they're surrounded by what he believes to be innocents.
Yeah.
And, his commanding officer commands their company to open fire. And the only way he knows that he can stop that command is to punch this guy out and issue a counter command.
Yeah.
So he punches the guy out, but the guy doesn't have a glass jaw. And so they put Flynn under arrest and go ahead and murder all of these innocent people.
Which, if this was Heinlein, that would be, there would be a larger statement there, right? There would be a larger, more powerful statement about the wasteful mercenary quality of American military. And about like the military machine and the military industry, like a la Starship Troopers, but instead it's just a plot tool. Like there's, it doesn't go anywhere beyond this. He barely ever talks about this ever again. It doesn't even remotely affect Flynn Taggart in any psychological regard from this point forward.
No, it's a plot point.
Yeah, it's. It's all it is a tool to springboard him from here to Mars / Phobos and Deimos. That's it. Like, you would think later on in the book that maybe there would be some further talk about protecting innocence. Why? Because I didn't do it then, right? Or a little bit of character regret. Or I made an impulsive decision to take out the leader of, to take out my commanding officer, but not resolve the situation. God, I feel guilty. Like, literally, there are, because he talks in here that there are children who died.
Yeah.
Like, they're monks, right? These innocents that they fire on are monks, and that they find body parts of children in there. Flynn Taggart never goes back to that ever again, at least where we've read. Like, this doesn't even remote.
Once again, it's an opportunity that just dropped. So they then get immediately shipped out to Mars with no consequences for their actions as a unit whatsoever. Is that what this is about? Because spoiler, his entire company gets wiped out when they transfer to Mars. Is this supposed to be punishment for them for what they've done? Or am I giving them too much credit as authors?
No. Here's the problem I have with that too. So they fire on all these innocent civilians, right? And who are some of the characters that are in his platoon on Earth when they fire on the innocent civilians, right? I think you're going the same place I am. There's Weems, Gates, Arlene, who Arlene Sanders, who is like the deuteragonist of the book. Like, she comes back up where we stopped reading. Gunny Goforth.
The Rons.
If Flynn Taggart is the one who got court-martialed, right, or whatever, and he was sent as punishment to the Mars base, why did all these other people show up on the Mars base too?
Because he's not sent to Mars as punishment. They deviate from the story right there, and they go, hey, guess what? We got assigned to Mars, but there's no time to punish you and court-martial you, so we're just going to hold you in custody. And why? Throw him in a brig on Earth. Why did they take him to Mars with them? I don't understand it. It's stupid.
There's also... I don't know. I feel like if there was like a military professional who was in the Corps or something like that that could come in and give us some insight on this, that'd be cool. But I don't even want to suffer that for them. It just feels bad. There's never even a clear explanation. The fact that you had to explain that to me, and I did read this... means that I didn't give enough of a crap because I just wanted to get to the places where Flynn Taggart was shooting apart corpses.
Well, yeah, and let's jump forward to that then. Let's go ahead and get rid of he goes to Phobos.
He cleverly talks his way out of detention with the Rons,
but
you want to know what it is? So they get to Phobos and he's in detention, and while they're there, some stuff in the gates, right? Some stuff goes happening with the gates. Which are these structures they discover on Mars, Phobos, Deimos.
Deimos has already disappeared, by the way. And we don't talk about that in the books, really.
No.
I don't remember reading it until...
He appears on Deimos.
He appears on Deimos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. Like, you would think if a moon vanished from the air...
That'd be like a big deal. We'd be like, oh, we're going to Phobos. Guess what? The sister base Deimos disappeared.
And in the original readme and in the text, that's right there. It's present. That's actually the thing that starts like triggering them off to some weird stuff's going on here because a whole moon disappeared.
One of the biggest failings of this book, if I can even call it that, is that they rely so much on the readers. Knowledge of a readme file. I feel like that's part of it. They're like well, you play Doom. You read the README file, so you know what's going on. You know about Deimos Base and all this other stuff. We don't need to use any details. We'll just, when it happens, it happens. Who cares? We're really good writers. Piss off.
The thing that makes Flynn Taggart mostly upset is not even that the radio is going wild or that people could be hurting, but on page 15, when he starts hearing the screams come through the radio, it says a number of things happened at once. More screams and gunfire came over the radio, and I thought I heard a woman scream.
Oh, no. Look out. That lady needs protection.
It's all in italics, right? It's all in italics. He's more bothered by I thought I heard a woman scream than in any regard with the original situation where children were being gunned down. Like, that didn't...
Oh, God, he sucks. They all sucks. That's good.
They all suck. And then two pages later, and he's afraid that this scream is his friend Arlene Sanders.
Yeah.
At that moment, I thought that Mars might be the last beautiful sight I would ever experience. Ahead lay nothing good. The thought that I might shortly die didn't bother me nearly so much as the dread of letting down my loved ones. ... There weren't that many back on Earth.
Look
out. But
there was
one here on Phobos that meant everything to me. Maybe I did love her. I couldn't say. I didn't mean that literally. What I couldn't say, I can't even read. I couldn't say it with her. What? Okay. Maybe I did love her. I couldn't say. I mean that literally. I couldn't say it with her hooked up with Wilhelm Dodd, the dirty bastard, but that didn't mean crap. If Arlene were in trouble, then putting my life on the line was the easiest choice I'd ever made. Doing my duty didn't mean that I had a death wish. It meant that I would have to stay alive as long as possible to find her and hump her out. All right.
Oh, yeah, you want to hump her out, all right.
Yeah, all he cares about is getting with Arlene, right? And he's constantly, every time that there's a mention of Arlene Sanders, who I'm going to venture to say is a far better character than he is. Like, if they did anything well as writers, it's that the minute we meet Arlene and that we see Arlene move forward, she's constantly pushing back against her own perception in the reader's eyes and in Flynn's eyes as just a piece of ass. She's super capable. She is smarter. Basically the smarter of the two, right? She's the tactician of the two, and not in that way where it's like girls are smarter than boys and the boys do all the physical work. She's a better soldier than Fly is. She's survived a hell of a lot longer and more effectively than he has. He's a doddering idiot in the first 100 pages of these books. She's found all these clever ways. She's, like, guiding him through with marks on the walls, and she's leading him to all these weapons. Like, she is this tool by which he survives, which I think is really cool. And I like Arlene as a character as we find more and more about her later. Like, she's fleshed out better. She loves reading science fiction. She does love
reading science fiction because we're science fiction writers who gotta include some of that science fiction in this book. References to that. Maybe one day our book will be great.
Do you think that maybe Bradley and we were deaf if you made the lady read science fiction so that way they could think about her when they were by themselves at night? I gotta think about Arlene Sanders.
There's Flynn Taggart is the world's biggest white knight. That bro puts on a fedora and m'ladies all over the place. He's gonna smoke his vape. He's gonna come up. He's gonna open your door for you. Don't worry about it. He's gonna protect you from the bad monsters.
Hey baby, you want to come over to my house and eat some chicken nuggies?
Oh, don't worry about it though, because you got a boyfriend. I'm your best friend. I love you way better than he ever would.
Wilhelm Dodd's just a piece of garbage. I got all the nunchuck skills you need to stay alive. I don't even care about Wilhelm Dodd. He might have pushed me down when I was a kid, but I don't care. He's just a big pizza face. I don't care about him. You know, if me and Wilhelm Dodd had a fight,
I wouldn't even fight him. I'd walk away and show how much of a better man I am.
Come on, Arlene. you know, you may be my best friend, but I still want to hump it out with you.
Don't worry about it.
But I mean that in the military sense, right?
We're friends, but I could love you so much better than he could. I'm like you, Superman.
Do you think maybe when all this hell stuff is done, we can maybe get hooked up, hitched?
Do you want to hump it out when hell's over with?
You can call me, everybody else calls me Fly, but you can call me Fly.
I just tell you. I thought you'd call me FL. Let's cut out one more letter. Fly. That's how much closer we are. You just call me Fool Taggart.
I had a real 90s moment when I was reading this too, and I remember this a lot when I was a kid. The name okay. Sanders really bothered me as her last name. And why? Because I think about Deion Sanders, but then I think about something else. And do you know what that other something else is? What is it?
Kentucky Fried Chicken.
And what about it in particular?
Because Colonel Sanders, he constantly refers to her as PFC Sanders,
yes,
which is like KFC Sanders. Right. Oh, but, I made a note about that in the second part of the reading.
So that's one thing that happens to me, but I have another one that goes even further than that.
Okay.
I can't help but hear the last name Sanders without thinking of the commercial with Deion Sanderclaus. Do you remember Deion Sanderclaus?
No, I
don't.
So
it was this, like, I don't even remember the reference, right? But I remember, like Deion Sanders did something where he dressed up like Santa Claus, and there was this joke about Deion Sanderclaus. And so now all I think about when I see Arlene Sanders' name is Arlene Sanderclaus. And I'm waiting for Fly at some point to be like, "What's up, Arlene Sanderclaus?" And to like make this deep cut reference to this joke that only I give a crap about, but then I can't take anything seriously. Also, can we talk about how garbage the names in this book are? William Gates, we know that name, right?
I'm on that page right now, because let me read this part. Read this part. Oh,
please do.
Hey, I'm going to make a sick reference for you from video games. Nobody's probably going to get it. It's a deep cut. Real clever.
If we were on the internet, this reference would be known as the deep web cuts of the internet.
When the fear snake slivers around inside your gut,
is that
it's
poop?
Pretty damned easy to just start squeezing off at anything that moves. Then I recognize the shape as one Corporal William Gates.
Keep talking, cool. Man. I'm invested. No, you were doing so good there.
I know. Hey, man, I got to get back into the voice. Hold on. Bill, I shouted, relief flooding me in contact with a fellow light drop. What are these terms like that he uses so bad that
Jaggies.
It's
a Jaggies light drop humping it.
The fear snake slithers around inside your
that
gut.
That sounds like poop, right?
Just start squeezing off at anything that moves.
Oh, man, the fear snake slithering inside of me. I got these hot ropes slithering inside of me.
He was one of the monkeys who jumped on my back when I popped weems.
I like to
pop some weems.
Keep going, because I have another one of his moments of, like, bad jargon that I wanted to highlight.
Bill had a very distinctive face with eyes spaced wide apart and a scar that ran from his prominent chin into his lower lip. Does Bill Gates have a scar?
No.
I mean, he's really in the news now, and I don't remember seeing a scar.
Nope.
I do remember him.
I found the page, by the way.
Okay, please read, because I... this is chapter two, basically... he escapes from the Rons and finds his first zombie, which is Bill Gates. And that goes into chapter three.
Okay, I have a really picky thing.
Yeah.
I need to look up the term really quick. He talks about why Gates is stumbling around, right?
Okay. While you're doing that... You keep searching something. I'm going to go forward a little bit. It's talking about this Gates thing.
Yeah.
All that kept racing through his head over and over was the word zombie. He just comes up. That's the first thing he comes up with. He's like, oh, hey, guess what? This dude's a zombie. Don't worry about it. He just looks like a guy I know, and he smells like sour lemons. But he's a zombie.
God, how many times does sour lemon show up for you?
I didn't count.
Way.
I lost count.
It was over 10. Once we hit 10, I was done. I was done highlighting. What a crappy way to describe how something smells. Mm-hmm. Let me just open up my fridge and grab out the... Every lemon is sour.
Right. Right. It's
There's no sweet lemons.
It's like they smell like cleaning products.
Sour lemons.
Clean zombies. Sour Patch Kid zombies.
He talks about how with Weems... with Gates, he says, that scar. He was walking in an erratic manner, I assumed. Men in combat situations can get very weird, and I'd seen plenty worse than this. Battle fatigue might have even explained the strange words coming out of his mouth. Stuff that sounded like an old horror movie. We haven't used the word battle fatigue, the phrase battle fatigue, to refer to PTSD since World War II. Like, there's been lots of iterations of battle fatigue, right? But it's making me think that Fly Taggart or Bradlin and Weaver and Defeat of Hugh have no idea actually what battle fatigue is.
Yeah.
Slash PTSD, right? Like, this seems more like he's talking about shock.
Yeah.
Than battle. That's not battle fatigue.
But that's what I'm saying is I haven't looked up whether either of these guys have military experience.
No, of course not. They're fat libertarian dudes. Nothing wrong with being overweight. It's totally fine. I totally understand. But I'm no, they're not. Who cares?
Clearly they don't,
because this book sounds like garbage.
You know how I can tell you how they don't? It's because when we get further in, after he's looting Gates's body, and he says Gates only had a single spare mag, and the one in the rifle was dead. Still shaking, I reloaded the rifle, dropping rounds left and right. How do you drop rounds out of a magazine?
Read it again.
Gates only had a single spare mag, and the one in the rifle was dead.
Okay, single spare mag.
Yeah.
The one in the rifle is dead, so I don't need that
one. So he took that one out and is putting the other one in.
Dropping rounds left and right, right? Can you read the next part?
And crept on, wondering who would come running at the sound of me murdering my dead chum.
No, what was the part about dropping rounds left and right?
I reloaded the rifle, dropping rounds left and right. He didn't reload the mag, he reloaded the rifle. They don't know
right.
how magazines work.
Right, you have to put the rounds inside of the magazine and then
if
put
you
it
said,
in the rifle,
if, yeah,
right?
If you said I was reloading the spare mag,
yeah.
Fine. But don't right. just say I reloaded the rifle.
Right. Right.
Dropping rounds.
And what is this? Some lever action rifle where you shoot and you like put the rounds in the side?
I don't understand how a Sig Cal works.
No. It's a gas operator, right? So
he says semi automatic?
Yeah, so he says a semi automatic gas operated infantry combat weapon.
Oh, it's right there, idiot.
Yeah. But it's like gas operated is. I actually hate that phrase, gas operated. So when
it's
I was
an M211.
When I was a kid, when I read this book,
uh-huh.
Now we grew up in a household with a lot of firearms, right?
A lot of guns.
I read this when I was in seventh grade, and I thought gas operated literally meant like, here's a gun, pour some gasoline in it.
Oh my God.
Don't judge me, okay? Because it's not like this idiot explains to people who might not know anything about guns. I knew a lot of stuff about guns, and I didn't realize that he didn't pour gas into this gun. This is why I don't shoot anymore. But gas operated was like, when the bullet fires, it works the action. Like,
yeah.
That's the way any semi-automatic
like
works.
Like an AR.
Right. The gas blowback forces the next round to feed in.
Not mechanical.
Right.
Gas. Also, just looking at the name of the Sig Cal, the M211, I was trying to find. There's an army truck that's an M211.
Cool. There's a
highway that's an M211. So this is clearly a made-up rifle.
Do you know that truck is also gas operated?
Oh, cool joke.
So do you think he's like walking around with a big truck?
That's
stupid.
Eventually,
don't even think,
he
let's
is.
Not, let's not.
Oh,
let's not
God.
Continue going down that path. You talked about jargon, right?
Yeah.
I can't believe that you talked about the zombie part in chapter 3 and didn't get to this. And I need to read this because
please.
I think about it all the time in my head.
I had to pick and choose what I made notes on because there's a lot of them.
And not a day has gone by since I started reading this piece of hot garbage that I haven't thought about this line. I stared, shaking. Like a California earthquake. I was looking at a zombie. That was all that kept racing through my head, screaming the word over and over again between my ears. Zombie, zombie, zombie.
That's the line I was talking about, yeah.
Just keep waiting. It's at the end of this paragraph, buddy. What utter shit. Maybe Arlene could believe in all that crap and bull roar. She watched those damn horror movies. Those damn horror movies, all the like. I wasn't never going to watch. When all of a sudden did he take on, like, this colloquial Southern...
That's the Southern thing, yeah.
I was never going to watch anything like a freaking zombie. I was crazy, bugging, freaked like some hippie punk snot flying on Belladonna. I was crazy, bugging, freaked.
Freak out on that, Belladonna.
Like some hippie punk snot flying on Belladonna.
Hi, Cattail.
Hey.
Hippie punk snot flying on Belladonna. Oh, because that's what we hippies use. We use Belladonna. Freaking out like some hippie punk snot flying on Belladonna. I'm flipped out freaking hard on some hippie punk snot flying on Belladonna. I'm a hippie punk snot just flying on Belladonna. Whoa! I'm a hippie punk snot just flying on Belladonna. I'm a hippie punk snot just flying on Belladonna.
Are you flying on Belladonna?
I'm flying on Belladonna, bro. There's a lot of spit on my screen right now. It just sounds so stupid.
Oh, man, dude. You realize we're on page 23 of 100.
We're not even talking about this book as a book. We're just identifying. It's fucking painful to read. I want to get to books 3 and 4 because that's where I think this shit really opens up.
It's not going to be better, bro. That's the problem. You think it's going to be better because you remember it. You remember that this book was awesome as a kid. It's not. It's not good. It's never going to be better. We're going to do this for the next 2 months of our lives and hate ourselves. And everybody else is going to hate us. Nobody's ever going to listen to our fucking podcast because we're going to do this.
Dude, you're crazy bugging freaked out. Like, crazy bugging freaked out.
Belladonna.
Who chooses Belladonna? Is that a reference?
What is that? What even is Belladonna?
It's like a. I don't know. Can we look that up? Because I feel like I'm being a real idiot and not identifying that maybe talking like that phrase, hippie punk snot flying a Belladonna. Might
oh
be
yeah,
like
no,
a
there's definitely Belladonna uses and side effects yeah. and warnings. Belladonna punks. Tincture or Belladonna leaf.
Yeah,
Belladonna is a plant also known as Atropa Belladonna, blah, 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 blah. Belladonna has been used in alternative medicine as an aid in treating arthritis pain, colds, hay fever, bronchospasms caused by asthma or whooping cough, hemorrhoids, nerve problems.
I got hemorrhoids from Belladonna.
I'm a hippie punk snot flying on basic demulsifants so I can feel slightly better about my asthma.
It doesn't. Oh, my God. Side effects. Let's see our side effects.
Feeling slightly sleepy?
Drowsy. Maybe? Tachycardia, palpitation, dizziness, nervousness, urinary hesitancy, and retention.
I'm so crazy hippie, couldn't pee. This is on Belladonna.
I'm a hippie punk snot flying crazy on... Why couldn't he say LSD?
Decreased sweating, constipation, increased ocular tension, photophobia, blurred vision, mydriasis. I don't even know what mydriasis is.
You got a mydriasis. I got a mydriasis. So I'm going to make sure that Lieutenant Weems knows. Fly to Belladonna. I'm sorry. I've lost all direction with this hot garbage.
Okay. Chapter 3, he shoots that guy. He shoots some other zombies.
Continues. They get to the point where there's not even any action in the book because he's just like, I went through the next room and I shot a bunch of zombies and I was getting real good at it. And then eventually he finds the princes of hell.
Hey, right? I need you to know something, though.
Yeah.
Abruptly, I realized why the zombies' eyes were so dry and their vision was so bad. They never blinked. When did he ever talk about their vision being bad? Like, that's the thing.
Because they shot terribly?
They couldn't shoot? They shoot.
Maybe it's because they're friggin' zombies.
Later.
And anything.
Here's one of my favorite terrible sentences from this chapter. I closed my eyes when I squeezed the trigger. The gunshot snapped me awake again. I jumped up, slid the Sig Cow into ready position, and backed away from the undead dead.
As hardcore a soldier as Fly Taggart, is he closing his eyes when he shoots? Like, that seems like some... I don't close my eyes anymore when and if I shoot in the rare times that I do, right? Why is this guy closing his eyes when he's shooting? Do you have a death wish? I'm not even a... Here's Rance telling you how to soldier, okay?
I'm going to flap through some of these parts in these chapters real quick just to give you some shit that I'm pissed off about.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Also, in this chapter, in chapter 3, still, at one point he says, first contact with the zombies, and they'd rolled over, and to coin a phrase, play dead. He spelled it R-O-L-E.
What?
Yeah, page 27.
Okay. What?
I might soon be the only living human on Phobos. Thanks for that, by the way. I realized I had little faith in the guards I'd left back in the mess hall. First contact with the zombies. He's talking about the Rons. They'd roll over and, to coin a phrase, play dead. That's not how you spell roll over, guys. It's R-O-L-L, like a dog.
I can't even find it. I trust you. I trust you, man. I trust how garbage it is. I'm just curious to know, like, if it's...
He's constantly talking about how he's not a team player, but he loves the Marines. If there's anything that...
Semper Fi!
Right. If there's anything that screams Marine, it's being a team player.
Roll over and, to coin a phrase, play dead. What page was that on?
Page 27.
You know what's funny? It's also page 27 for me. At the very bottom.
What's your first line on that page?
Seeming to see me for the first time.
That's on the previous page for me.
Okay. So our page distinctions are somewhere like mid.
They're close.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Oh, yeah. I just wrote that it's starting to get annoying, the amount that he talks about Arlene. I think we should do a full book count of how many times he refers to Arlene and her sweet body.
Yeah, and I was gonna say each time he talks about Arlene, you have to make a reference back to her physical appearance, right? Like how good her body looks. Like I wasn't looking at other soldiers; I was just checking out Arlene's body.
Doesn't matter if somebody's dead. I don't care as long as I don't find Arlene. I don't think I can handle it if I.
I don't care if I see other dead bodies. I still want to see my friend Arlene, but mostly I just don't want to see that body dead. I want to see it alive.
Chapter 4, he starts, he's ran into two more zombies at the beginning of that. There's a zombie little girl. They keep saying stuff about Phobos, fear. Like, they're talking, which is dumb.
Yeah.
He starts really talking about the levels here. He's talking about the dynamic of lighting effects in Doom at one point. A single strip of hellishly bright luminescence flickered on and off high in the center of the ceiling. The people from Doom were probably like, yo, we got dynamic lighting effects. Can you please talk about that in your book?
Mostly bothered that when he talks about the pinky demons, he doesn't talk about how they're they have a hard time navigating stairs. Which, if you play the original Doom, you know to trip up a pinky demon. Oh, just give me some hot loading screen tips. Hot loading screen tips. You put this one in your loading screen. Don't like pinky demons? Just trike them up some stairs. I don't even know what trike means. Just trike them up some stairs. Trip them up. Stairs.
I trike those demons real good.
You could take care of them in two full shotgun blasts. Or maybe three, but most of the time you got to use three because we don't understand how bullets work in this game. So you got to do two shotgun blasts when you're real good. Or like the zombies, you can kill them with two to three pistol blasts or one to the brain pan, as the readme says. But what's really funny is that you can't pick and choose your shots in Doom because you shoot along a single plane.
It just hits whatever's up or down.
All enemies are infinitely tall.
I like how, in chapter 5, he finally meets his first imp. And he's so adamant that they're not demons. They're extraterrestrials. They're not demons. Why? because there's no such thing as a demon, but there can be zombies, but there's no demons. It's fine. Dude, just... And then later on, he finally admits that they're demons and just... Because why? Because Arlene tells him so. Just Arlene's going to tell me.
Watch this big wink I'm about to do. They're not demons. We're going to find out what they are later. he That's goes cool through if anybody listening to this is like, but Rance and Bob, why haven't you gotten to the plot of what happens in this book? Because there's no plot. Point A, he gets to Mars. Point B, demons appear. Point C, he kills all the demons. Point D, there's a lot of throwing up. He's constantly throwing up. He throws up like 4 times.
For a guy who never gets to eat anything, he throws up a lot.
Point five, he takes a swim through toxic waste. I'm not sure why that seems like a good idea, but we're not even going to reflect on that. Point six, he fights princes of hell, which are big minotaurs. That's the end of episode one. Point seven, he goes through a gate, appears on the other side, and meets up with the love of his life. I mean, his best friend. I mean, non-objectified
woman.
A
really great Marine with a great figure.
I mean, a completely modestly dressed woman who he's not at all remotely attracted to in any regard because he respects her space and her needs and her autonomy as a human being. I mean, Arlene Sanders. I mean, not just, I'm just...
Do you want to hear another cool one that I got for you?
Please
here?
Do.
Brad Lynn and Weaver and Daffodil Pugh at one point say that there's no south or north or south on Phobos. That's actually not true. Most planets have poles.
They have a basic arbitrary like designation of what is north and what is south.
Poles are based off of the rotational axis, except for Uranus. And I don't mean literally Uranus, the planet Uranus, because some planets don't have magnetic poles. So we just happen to have a planet where our magnetic poles are based around our north and south.
Well, we also have a, like, regardless of whether or not there are poles, right?
Yeah,
we would have an arbitrary understanding of where is north and where is south, because that's how... That's, like, basic, like, I don't even know, man. Like, they're going to, if it's humans on Phobos that created this base, they're going to have a north and a south, right?
Yes.
They're not going to go, guys, I don't know.
Let's go to
A place. Why? A place is in a different place than B place, but we can't call it north or south. Why?
One of the last major things I want to talk about that infuriated me reading this book was the flashback sequence. The flashback.
When
we go back to first meeting, my best friend, not love interest, wink, wink, Arlene Sanders. Don't worry about it. We're going to have a William Tell shooting contest on a Marine base. Are you kidding me? That's a thing that, no, that would never happen. That would never happen on a military base. Everyone would get court-martialed for participating in an activity like that. Every human being who knows how to use a gun knows you don't use another human being as a target or even downrange. You just don't do it. It's the stupidest thing I've ever read. Oh, it's gonna prove how tough she is.
Just let
somebody shoot an apple off her head and then she shot it off of his head. It was cool. She's a tough lady.
I'm mostly upset that Flynn Taggart didn't actually take like part of that, you know, like. Maybe he could have put his head there and not put an apple on it and just said, I need you to aim 5 inches lower.
Bro, are you mad at him? Is that why you're calling him Flynn? Because only his friends only call him Fly, unless they're pissed at him. Are you pissed at him? Because I'm f***ing pissed at him. I'm pissed at this book. I'm pissed that I'm reading it. I'm pissed that I've got another week of reading it.
Do you also notice that they never... Ever, because this is a book for, I guess, teens.
Babies? It's a book for babies. Babies and idiots.
The F-bomb is never dropped.
Mm-hmm.
On page 114, after he kills the Hell Princes, and he goes through, there was no way this standard issue. He talks about the, he says, turning a corner, I was greeted by a sight not calculated to reassure a man doubting his sanity. What? A gigantic skull, half the length of a full-grown man, glared at me through empty sockets. It seemed to be made of brass. I stared into its eyeless sockets before allowing my gaze to lower. The giant metal skull had a tongue, a curving, snaky metal tongue. There was no way this was standard issue in a UAC refinery. Of course the skull's tongue had to be a lever. I can't help it, I said. I'm a born lever puller. Is that a joke, or...?
No, I mean, it is. He thinks it's funny, and he uses it again multiple times in the book.
I'm a born lever. Is it like a reference to, like, I'm a born lever puller?
No, I think he's just trying to be clever.
I can't help it. My curiosity killed the fly.
You know what else pisses me off is when he talks about how he's not lucky, except that he's lucky as hell. Luck has never been my long suit.
It's all skill.
Never, except for the whole book. When every time he gets into a situation and he thinks about a thing and then that thing appears on the next page. Oh, I really wish I had a shotgun. Oh, shit, that zombie's got a shotgun. I wish I had a rocket launcher. Oh, man, there's a rocket launcher.
At the beginning of the Phobos base level where he's like, I was just really cool leaning on a locker and then I fell into it. And there's an AB-10 machine gun inside. Yes!
Oh, but I'm never
hoping
been lucky
to get that machine gun. At least
that gun that he just walks past. Remember, he goes through this whole thing where he uses his rocket to kill a whole bunch of zombies, and then it turns out that like there's other zombies, so he doesn't get the machine pistol that he wants. But then it's there like two pages later.
That's where he
place.
Finds it. Yeah, that's where I think that's the thing about this that blows me away is that they're almost so faithful to the way, not just the game, but the way the game is. What's the word? My brain is falling apart. The way the game is realized, uh-huh. Right? That in Doom, you pick up a shotgun, it's just laying around. You pick up a chain gun, it's just laying around. But when you translate that into a book outside of video game mechanics, it's so dumb.
Why does one of the demons look at him at one point and says, gosh, are we having a ball or what? Is this supposed to be this intelligence working through the demons?
I want to come back to that in books 3 and 4, because this is where I think they're doing some good foreshadowing, because that's referenced sort of again later on.
Man, I wish we could just spoil it, because
I don't. You can't spoil it because it's still bad. But at least it gets away from being Doom this and, like, into some weird, like, we really want to be Heinlein weird stuff.
I pushed all the way forward to chapter 15.
That's fine. That's where I'm at now, too.
How does it, when he goes through the portal, the gate, and he ends up naked because... That's what we do here is we got to make our protagonist and his lady friend naked when they meet. How is he naked there? But the transporters don't make you naked.
Wink, wink. I actually know exactly why. See, you're not thinking about you're being a real noob right now.
Right? I feel like it reading this.
Being a real noob. Let me tell you why. Okay. I got to give you some visuals while we're here. There's a difference between a gate and a teleporter, Bob. And if you remember all the way back from Doom,
mm-hmm.
We need a reason, okay, as to why you start a new episode with just your pistol. You're naked, okay?
Okay.
You start a whole new game. But when you go through a teleporter, you don't lose your stuff.
Right, I get it. I get what you're saying.
You know,
I appreciate that.
So the gates, mm-hmm. there's this deep dedication to the source material that is almost stupidly accurate. Like you go from episode 1 to episode 2 and you don't have it, you start the next episode with just your pistol, right? Yeah. Okay, whatever. That's just the mechanics of the way the game works, because the game was broken down into episodes based on your shareware and all that kind of garbage. But you go through a teleporter starting in episode 2, and you don't lose your guns. So, what was that face? Were you making fun of me or?
No. I was just thinking about how,
because you're an idiot, because you should remember that.
But here's the other. Really, here was the other thing I was heading towards.
This book is
this book is pissing me off, dude.
But your inability to remember the smallest.
Come on! I didn't spend my youth jerking off to Doom. Okay. My youth jerking off to Castlevania. I wonder if there's Castlevania books out there.
Bob, I believe there may be a Worlds of Power book that is Castlevania. Okay.
Cool. You're probably right.
No one dies in a Worlds of Power book. And if you don't remember, if anybody listening to this doesn't remember Worlds of Power books,
well, then you're not my friend.
You're not my friend. They were basic kids books. There's a Simon's Quest Worlds of Power book, Bob.
We're on it.
We're doing it. Even better if it's written by a really bad let's see.
If you're writing a Worlds of Power book, you were probably a bad author.
Yeah. Worlds of Power, all these books based on Nintendo games. There's Bases Loaded, you know.
That's probably about as interesting as this book that we're reading right now.
I'm trying to see if you might be like a really bad libertarian person.
Why if Flynn and Arlene went through the portal and they ended up naked, this other guy, Johnny, went through the portal, the one that was lying on the Sig Cow, he wasn't a zombie. He was a guy who'd gotten killed by demons. Why was he not naked?
Can you tell me that again? Because I zoned out because I was reading too much about World Power Board.
Okay, so Flynn goes through the portal.
Yes, through the portal.
One of the first things he finds is the body of one of his former squad mates, Johnny, who's lying on top of a Sig Cow. Johnny's died shooting, like fighting. He didn't die a zombie. He died as a human.
Right.
Why is he not naked?
I think you might have just found the key.
Is the key that this book is stupid?
There's no continuity.
There isn't. Oh, and then just.
I'm saying that because I can't give you an answer on that. Like, of course it's dumb. It's just another tool by which he can find a gun laying around. Also, of all guns that you want to pick, okay.
This is one that's not even in Doom.
In Doom, right? Like it's the one that the zombie soldiers walk around with, this big box gun, right? Yeah. Which is dumb, because, and the same with the AB-10 machine pistol. I get it. He doesn't find a Gatling gun because Gatling guns just really aren't laying around.
And you can't just carry one in your teeth,
right? Do you also like the fact that there's a reference? There's a veiled reference back to Wolfenstein 3D in the book.
There's so many references to Wolfenstein.
With the swastika he finds on the ground.
The swastika, which is in the game.
Yeah, it's Wolfenstein. Back
he also worries that he's going to turn a corner and that a Schustoffel is going to be there to shoot him. Because guess what? That's in Doom. At one point, there's secret levels.
Just so you know, the swastika is only in the original Doom up until I think it's like Doom version 1.666, because they had to remove it because it was very offensive.
This book is offensive.
Can we talk, before we stop, about the meeting between Fly and Arlene? Because it's truly the first time that he has...
Because that's what we're getting to, the whole book. And I have to say, I do have to say that the book changes. When you add dialogue, it becomes a different, much more readable book.
Yeah.
The next couple of chapters past 16 are so much more easy to,
There's actually story, character development, and, like, Arlene being introduced in the book is the only thing that makes it remotely readable. When I say remotely readable, it's still hot garbage. But it's no longer just 114 pages of Fly Taggart doing dumb shit.
Right.
At least his dumb shit is reflected off of another, like,
there's
functional...
another semi-intelligent human being to tell him, don't do that, you're stupid.
Yeah. But, you know,
Even that becomes a joke, too, because we're like, oh, a lady told me not to do it. Better listen. You're the boss, lady. Wink, wink.
I also like that he knows who Rudyard Kipling is on page 121. He knows who Rudyard Kipling is, but has no idea who H.P. Lovecraft is.
Is that getting too far into the book?
No, it's fine. It's through.
That's next time.
It's through 16.
Oh, drop, is it? Okay.
Yeah. Drop the gun.
Oh,
drop
right.
The
oh, no, free, don't drop quote the
freaking,
at me.
Drop the freaking gun.
Oh, you dropped the freaking gun.
You dropped the freaking gun. Let's, can we do, can we do a dramatic, can we do a dramatic recreation of when he finds Arlene Sanders?
Yeah. Yes, in, absolutely.
But I don't want to read it. I want us to do it together.
Oh, like, I was just, I thought it'd be fun to read it.
No, we'll read it. But I want to do it first so it sounds stupid and then read it how it is because then it's just as stupid. So,
all right, who are you going to be?
It doesn't matter.
Okay, who's first?
You can start. So you got. I'm gonna press the secret wall because I see light coming through the wall. I'm gonna press the secret wall, and when I do so, I'm blinded by light. So I raise my gun, and I realize that the person in front of me. Okay.
I'm pointing a gun at you.
Pointing a gun at you. I'm gonna say, "Oh my gosh, you got a gun! Drop the freaking gun!"
You drop the freaking gun.
No, you drop the gun. Or no, you drop it.
You drop it, or you're going down.
Drop the gun.
If you don't drop that gun, I'm going to drop you.
I'm going to blow your dumb old head off. Your butthead head off.
Drop the gun, damn it.
I'm going to drop the gun now, or I'm going to make you into blood paste on the wall.
If you don't drop the gun, I'm going to drop my pants and show you what that's all about.
Drop the gun, man, because if you don't, I'm going to probably ask you to drop your pants, and we're going to totally agree. On a consensual relationship between two men right now.
Drop the gun. I think that might be illegal because we're related. Drop your gun.
So good to see you.
Hey, what's up?
So good to see you.
We're friends. We're totally platonic friends.
Totally, okay. Totally brothers. Don't aren't in each other's bodies at all.
Oh man, how long does it take you to realize that somebody's not?
Right, like, and also, he's been thinking about Arlene this whole time. So he presses this wall. He finds Arlene on the Deimos base
because he finds everything that he wants because he's lucky.
Because right, a bloody naked figure held a gun pointed directly at my face. By reflex, I shoved my own piece right between its eyes. Drop the gun.
Drop the freaking gun.
Put it down. I swear to God, I'll blow your full head off.
Where I can see them, put your hands up.
And I'll move or...
Ground, on the ground, move.
Her eyes. Her eyes were alive and she spoke words. But now we both stood, each pistol pressed against each other's face, eyes wide with fear, wonder, and hope. Was it? Could it be? Could she be? Shouting at the top of our voices in pain, rage, and desperate need. My hammer was cocked, but my finger outside the trigger guard. I had just begun to suspect. Just begun. Something clicked in my brain. The penny dropped. I recognized the bloody, disheveled, pallid creature. A dream come true, if true, in a world that specialized in nightmares. Painting before my face, watching warily, ready to fire off half the magazine if necessary, stood the reason I had come this far and hadn't yet given up. You haven't heard another human being this whole time. You would think that if this is your best friend, you know that voice. Like, even, okay, you're looking for a lady, right? Two, you're looking for a tough lady. Three, you should know your friend's voice. Four, you don't have to have this whole conversation about blowing each other's full head off. The minute you hear that voice, you're like, bro, hey.
Hey, you're alive.
It's us.
Cool. Hey.
It's us.
I don't want to do this anymore.
You're me. So, I'm just Fly and Arlene find each other, and they don't. Oh, no, they don't do that. They don't
worry. Because they're just friends. We're good pals, platonic.
So here is my homework I want to give out this week.
She wanted lips so they could face you face, kiss you faces.
Here's the homework. You can actually do the homework along with the audience so that they.
Yeah, I did it this time.
Okay.
What are you trying to say? That I don't do my homework?
Yeah. Look, I'm dealing with that a lot right now, okay?
I'm going to finish the book.
Okay.
We're going to finish Knee Deep in the Dead.
Yeah.
That's the homework. We're going to finish this book and get through it.
Okay, together.
It sucks. Together. We're going to get it together. I don't know, man. I don't know what... I'm already... Can we just delete podcasts? Like, delete ideas from our head?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we just...
I think that maybe we made a mistake and...
No, so we have to get through the end of the book. So the next, it's the next 130 pages or so is by next week.
You can do it. You,
yeah, we can do it.
We can all do it.
It gets better. Yeah, that's all. That's all. I have no other. I don't want to count things.
I think we should keep try to like mentally keep track. I don't mean like physically numbers. Just think about how often he. Now that he's met Arlene, how much he desires her.
Yeah.
And how many pathetically sad white knight bullshit things are said and done, and that it's clear that our authors are grossly misogynistic and making the literary equivalent of women can't drive jokes.
Is this okay, so the question I now have for you to consider for next week, and a point of discussion I want to bring up after we finish the first book. Is this a product of the authors being these libertarian asshats? Because we see this in all these other libertarian helmed books, right? Like Larry Correa does it a lot. Even the early Jim Butcher books, like Harry Dresden was the biggest white knight until he gets to about like 2009, 2010. And it's almost like Jim Butcher had a revelation that all of a sudden these female characters didn't just need to be useless bodies to put things in anymore.
And that almost the character itself makes the realization. And he goes, look, I believe in chivalry, but like, holy shit, I'll punch a lady if I got to.
Yeah. And like he changes, right?
Yeah.
So is this, but we see this with these libertarian.
Not that that's what I'm saying.
What, you don't want to?
You don't punch some ladies.
You don't want to. So is that a byproduct of these libertarian authors and their perspectives on women, or is it a product of like the early 1990s when this was written?
I think it's both, dude. And I think that's the thing that we should keep an eye out for in the next reading, honestly.
Because I have a feeling
the objectification of the character and the idea that she is, as much as she is a capable, complicated woman, that there is still this weird... It's like the objectification while attempting not to objectify. Like, hey, I'm an okay dude. I don't objectify women, even though women are hot.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really interested knowing having read books 2, 3, and 4 and knowing what goes on with Arlene later on. Like, I do think there are these hints that come up later of like the authors almost seeming to grow and recognizing the limitations of their first book. Mm-hmm. Because spoiler alert, as far as I remember, Fly and Arlene never become a thing.
Yeah. And ever. And once we get past book 2, there's not games to rely on anymore.
No, and that's where I actually think it grows a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like it tries to. It doesn't get smarter; it gets broader.
Yeah,
it tries to be smart because it does try to bring in all of these like sci-fi elements that are way more Star Trek than Star Wars.
Yeah,
It's not this. It's still doddering and stupid, but it's not as doddering and stupid as even the first book is. Even book 2. Really gets away from the simplicity of the games by going, especially by introducing other characters. In book 2, we get Albert Gallatin, we get Jill, these other characters who have some autonomy in this world and who affect Fly and Arlene in more human ways.
Yeah.
And I think I am excited to get to those because I do, as I remember, I do remember the first book even as a kid being like, okay, it was good. Like, it did its thing. But at least the books 2, 3, and 4 have other characters that we can get a better idea as to who Fly is and who these other characters are in the world. Because it really does get fleshed out with other people, with other motivations, and with other conflicts happening. Yeah. Sorry.
And you're great. I mean, it's
just suffer through
exactly
book
right
one. Suffer through book 1. Books 2, 3, and 4 are equally bad, but at least they've got some redeeming qualities of trying to be stories that are being told for a greater purpose, as opposed to just regurgitating shit in a video game that you could just play.
I hope so, because I am having a hard time. I look at this
finish book one. Just finish
this thing that we have created, and it was very daunting this week.
Are you having existential crisis?
Yes.
Getting close. Yeah.
This was supposed to be fun.
Yeah, it's not.
It's not fun.
It's not fun. So finish book one. That's all we're gonna do.
That's called homework.
Actually,
don't finish it and just listen to us be upset about it.
Finish book one, and next week, I'm gonna quiz you on book one.
Me or everyone?
You.
Okay, cool.
You.
All right. Can we have an actual questions, like 1 through 10 questions?
I'll do my best.
All right. Let's make it. No promises. Let's see if we can create. Maybe I'll come up with a quiz for you. Maybe we'll create a Kahoot.
Yes! Something like that. Yes! Can we? Yes! There is nothing I love more, okay, as a teacher, than mm-hmm. creating a Kahoot and watching 15 to 20 young people scramble like Lord of the Flies to be number one in that Kahoot. And in the process, also secretly playing that Kahoot and beating all of them because I know all the answers.
Of course.
Wow. That is one of my favorite pleasures. Like, I'm like, I don't know who this person is, but man, they're really doing a great job. And then at the end being like, it's me.
But which you I'm told sure, everybody the secret now.
Well, who cares? Also, they know it. Like the first time I do it and then I never do it again. Right. But like also kids, their energy, their violent, angry, rage fueled energy about Kahoots just carries over into me. And I want to just watch blood pour. I want to watch them like thumbs in the eyeballs. Like you could not answer that before me.
Does a Kahoot disappear?
No.
Is it a time thing? So we can leave it up and people can just yep. keep. Okay.
But I demand that anyone who plays the Kahoot must listen to the music on Kahoot the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
We may have. I may need to prove at some point that I have actively looked for my own personal listening pleasure remixes of the Kahoot quiz music on my phone.
Oh, no. Oh,
because, no, dude, no. If you. Okay, so if anybody out there is not familiar with Kahoot, it's an easy quiz making tool, right? And it's visual, and then you can like quiz your friends with it, and it's become really popular in classrooms because it's free to use. But I mean, come on, man, 10 hours of this on YouTube. Let's hit this up. Oh my god, I gotta make it. Yeah. Ding, ding.
Are there people who are like Kahoot?
I mean, Kahoot. I think people get friggin' like, what if
it makes me psyched?
What if somebody redid the Kahoot song like an original Bobby Prince Doom song?
I would love it. I'm going to look up Kahoot remixes this week and make that next week's theme.
Remix Doom. Let's see. There's got to be. The internet has it, right? Yeah, I don't see anything. Like, Kahoot remix. Oh, Kahoot remix MIDI. People are just like, why am I just listening to these idiots search things on
I don't know why I'm listening to this idiot search
come on
things.
Now. Come on now. Yeah, I can't find it. Who knows?
Man.
I mean, come on, man. Check out this.
It went away. Doesn't like it. There it goes.
This is a jam. This is my jam. Oh.
Why is there glass breaking? Okay.
This is my jam, man. Just get. You know what? Fuck Doom. Love Kahoot. Also, drink yourself into oblivion and get funky, freaky, fresh with a freaky, fresh, hippie, punk snot flying on Belladonna. Okay, I'm out of here, man. I'm going to go probably cry myself to sleep in the shower.
Cool.
Once we're done there, lament the fact that I haven't drowned. And then I'm going to continue reading book one of Doom, Knee Deep in the Dead, a fantastic new space opera by Deaf Edom Hugh and Brad Linneweaver, R.I.P. Then I'm going to go shoot a golden cannon, which is not a reference to my private parts. It's more a reference back to Brad Linneweaver when he was alive. Then I'm going to play Doom, but I'm not going to do that.
I'm just going to smoke a cigar, the same type of cigar.
As Camellia Piglia,
yeah,
with lust.
Nambla. Love you.
Love you too. Hope you're quarantining well. Hope you're taking care of yourself in the midst of the sickness.
That's right.
Everybody out there, hot winks.
I've been Bob.
I've been Rance.
And this has been the Quarantine Book Club. And if you'd like to find us online, check out our website, www.thequarantinebookclub.com. You can find us on Facebook at The Quarantine Book Club. You can find me on Instagram at DITS Tech. If you want to drop us a line, ask us some questions, whatever, check out our website. And there's ways to send us some emails, ask us questions, hate mail. Please do it.
Also, if you, I know for a fact, we had at least two listeners out there this week.
Also on YouTube.
Yeah, we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can watch these hot episodes uncut and live, and look at our dumb faces as we're zooming.
Dumb faces. If you have any questions you want to ask us about the books that we can do our best to answer, we'll do it. I'm not telling you to get an expert opinion on it, because these books are terrible. But if you have anything that you're curious about, or an observation that you want to make, or even a sequence that you want us to talk about, please do so, because frankly, I'm already exhausted about this garbage, and I don't want to think about it anymore.
Swimming in toxic waste right now.
Absolutely, just barely read the rest of it and still find a reason to talk for an hour and a half about it.
Yeah, exactly. And if you have something that you want to hear, let us know, because it'd be like throwing us a environmental suit.
Just don't be a hippie punk snot flying a belladonna.
Later.